slow it down.
Okay. Well, we always don't like to spend a lot of money. So we could look at option one then. You think that would work?
Representative McCracken, the only thing beyond option one to keep in mind is the possibility, and it seems to be a fairly good possibility, of the board entering into a contract with the Umatillas as well, which would be above option one. Option one is the level at which we are prepared to support the board out of grant funds.
Oh, well, I know what we could do. We could provide the position authorization for an administrative assistant and then fund it in the e-board if you got the contract. We could give you a limitation for that purpose of a dollar or something, or would we need to? Would it all fit in, Mike?
Mr. Chairman, as has previously been stated, I see no potential occurrence for direct federal receipts to this agency at this time. Whether the monies are received through the Indian Tribe or whether they're received through the Department of Energy, they would be once passed, cleansed, and handled as other funds. Mm-hmm. So I think really the federal fund limitation is really not required, and the amendments would be dealing with other funds only. I think in terms of staffing, the one difficulty you've got here, the department has indicated their willingness to handle the administrative staffing of the agency, with in effect give that agency a greater budget than $141,000, even though the cash set aside for the agency would be $141,000. Actually, that has a greater amount of flexibility in terms of utilization of that position for other Department of Energy activities when there are not duties and requirements to serve this board that can be doing other things. Whereas if it's an established position of the board, there might be some reluctancy to move the position over and to do agency activities. Furthermore, if you created a position and then anticipated that receipt of the Indian grant would fund the position, that may not be what the Indians want to use the money for. They may not want to hire a secretary for the board. They may want some other studies or assistance to the board to be had with their funds. Mm-hmm. My expectation would be that through most of the biennium, the activity of the board could probably be served with a fraction of an FTE in terms of clerical support. There would be probably times at which more than one may be required to get out the work of the board. And again, the option of having that greater clerical pool of the department to draw upon, and as long as there's no argument here on the part of the Department of Energy people that they will in fact provide that clerical support out of their existing budget, and that you have an expectation that will be the case and that they have that as well, then there's no real reason to carve out the money and establish the position for that purpose.
Okay, so now we're down to option one. And there's a line that says in direct costs includes rent, secretarial, phone, payroll, etc. That it would give an appropriation that could go up or down depending on the workload and the dollars received.
I would further expect that unless we had a concrete proposal before us for a dollar amount and a purpose, that they would then return to the emergency board if, in fact, they had a contract with the Umatilla Tribe.
Okay. Is that agreeable?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Now, there was one, Representative Cease wanted to, on page 2 of the printed bill, as amended, line 26, so that's page 2, line 26, it says, at the request of the governor, make policy recommendations on other issues, and these would be issues other than the location of the repository, which are hot issues, no pun intended. Now, Representative Cease would like to delete the at the request of the governor.
So moved.
Well, let's see what I wanted to see first, what they wanted to say about that, because I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, that was a section that was added by the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, and that was added essentially at our request after discussing it with the governor's office. And I think there were probably at least three reasons for doing that. One is to keep the board focused.
Primarily
focus
on the repository.
There are a lot of Hanford issues. There's defense waste, there's the end reactor, there's decommissioning of the old reactors up there. There's questions about the cribs, questions about hazardous materials, questions about low-level waste disposal. And so we wanted to keep the board focused on the repository issue, which is the one that needs a lot of public involvement and policy attention.
That's the one that people voted on in Measure 1. In May. That's what they voted on, right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Specifically repository.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Okay. The other thing is there was
a little bit of other language in there.
Was there? Was there, or was that just in the voter's pamphlet and the rhetoric of the campaign?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wires, I believe it was in the voter's pamphlet. There was a discussion about other things, but I think the wording of the ballot measure was specifically related to the repository.
It was pretty narrow. It certainly didn't get into closing down end reactors or anything like that, but I think, and I haven't looked at it in a couple of months, but I think there was a little bit more in than just that. Well, your memory would be better than mine on it. Wasn't there a little bit more?
I don't believe there was.
Okay.
But
I would.
But the question is still the same, whether the board remains focused on the repository.
Agree with his memory over mine.
Which is the issue that needs continuing public involvement, continuing pot stirring over a long period of time. I guess the other concern was that we may have a different relationship with the federal government on the repository versus something like defense waste. On the repository, it's an adversarial relationship. On the defense waste, we're trying to work cooperatively with the federal government to secure funds to clean up the 40 years worth of defense waste.
Yes.
So we may have some inconsistencies there if you tried to deal with both of them. And I guess the other concern was, as Mr. Chairman, as you're aware, on things like the defense waste or end reactor, in essence, the policy decisions have already been made as far as the state of Oregon's position, and now it's a matter of implementation.
Except for the bribe part, well, I'll explain to the subcommittee. Senator Hannah.
What, as I understand, you're deleting that entire subsection?
No, I wasn't. I only mentioned that Representative Cease had mentioned it to me. It was not a strong feeling of him. I wanted to discuss it, find out where it came from and what was behind it. Essentially because it was an issue that he had brought up.
Words of line 26. And
just at the request of the government.
But I didn't entertain that. Is anything other than a question?
I'd just keep it in there.
Oh. Reverend Jones.
Yeah, the subsection 6 says Oregon Hanford Waste Board shall do those things, and then these other things at the request of the governor. Gosh almighty, if they got to ask him if they're going to do everything, all of those things, I don't know whether there's much use to have a board or not.
Well, the first item.
I think that it's pretty plain. The top is the Oregon Hanford Waste Board shall make policy recommendations mm-hmm. in all those things, but this is at the request of the governor.
Well, first thing it says in section 6, sub 1, it says, okay, it's going to be a focus for it, but it's going to specifically discuss the high-level radioactive waste.
Right, then.
Okay, then, and recommend a policy on that, and then do these other things if the governor requests it.
Right, at the request, but that has the type of sort of a meaning there that they'll only do that at the request of the governor.
Those are words of limitation,
correct. But let me just...
It'd be sort of like Senator Thorne getting off the reservation. You have to get the co-chair's permission before you can talk about those other...
Or the board would have to get the governor's permission.
You can do whatever you're big enough to do in here, but I don't like that.
Okay, let me explain what I think is part of what's going on. There is a tendency of federal officials, and I have had a little experience on this as being a member of the Northwest Defense Waste Forum dealing with the defense waste. We got to a point in discussion with federal officials who came to visit us from the East Coast, where it was implicitly threatened that if we did not tolerate continued plutonium production out of the end reactor, that the federal government wouldn't be interested in cleaning up the mess they made in the last 40 years. I mean, that's flat clear.
It wasn't implicit.
It was, that's what they said. So, if you can bear with me, if there's a group that's focused on the repository and all the technical and scientific issues, should it be there or shouldn't it? And that's all it's doing. In the meantime, the department staff or other people are negotiating around defense waste or opening of Hanford, and the board isn't looking at that. And then somebody tries to make a deal. Like, we'll clean up the defense waste if you let us put the repository there and give you $100 million. This board having been independent from those other decisions, might say, wait a minute, you can't do that because there are scientific reasons and technical reasons why you wouldn't put a repository in this thing, notwithstanding all of the other arguments. That, I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it could be worded to where they would consult with him. But by guys, this doesn't say that. This guy says that these guys requested it, or they won't do it.
Mr. Chairman, that's precisely what was intended. That was the position of the governor's office, that they would like to see this board focused on the repository issue. And that if and when we're successful in having some influence over the repository issue, then maybe we get this board off on dealing with N-reactor or future plutonium production or whatever. But not at this point in time to give the board a very broad mission and, in essence, diffuse the efforts that the board should be spending on the repository, which is where the governor deemed the focus should be.
Could a compromise be found where Representative Jones suggested you would delete the words "at the request of" and insert "after consultation with the governor, comma, may make policy recommendations on other issues"? Does that get pretty close to it?
I think it's close.
You know, I didn't post this as a work session, but do you suppose anybody would mind? Anyone would ever
require the 24-hour notice? Just requires you let people know that you're going to be dealing with a piece of legislation.
Is there anybody in the room who would object us to us going to a work session on this? Everybody is interested in it, right? Open a work session on Senate Bill 13. Representative Jones moves on page 2 of the printed bill the deletion on line 26 of the words "at the request of" and insert the words "after consultation with," then after the comma "and following governor," insert "may." Objections to Representative Jones' motion? Senator Hannon?
I think what you're doing, Mr. Chairman, this is my own personal opinion. I think I understand what the governor's office is standing there, and I appreciate Mr. Dixon's statement. After consultation with the governor, what you're doing is then saying, go ahead and just send a note to the governor and then set about and do your own policies taken on these other issues. And I think the intent here was to allow the governor to have some involvement with what they were going to be doing in their activities. I think we've seen this in the beginning when the Energy Policy Review Committee started out
like a shotgun. They're all over the board. It took us several sessions to get focused back into what really the function was. And I think the intent here, Mr. Chairman, is not to stifle people so much as to make sure that they focus their attention on the real issue.
Well, I'm supportive of that, and I think that's clear and could be made more clear with discussion of the subcommittee. The point is we'd want them to focus on what the people of the state of Oregon wants the state to focus on, and that's the location of a repository. But to authorize them to get into the other areas, because sometimes they're interrelated, but to consult with the governor, they're held pretty tight anyway. You're going to staff them out of DOE, right? I can't really imagine them getting too far off the reservation. Can you help out with this? I just hate anything that's not unanimous. See if we can make Senator Hannon.
Mr. Chairman, if you added the words after consultation with the governor, I think, in effect, you're saying the same thing, because most of the members of the board will be appointed by the governor or will be from executive branch agencies. So if the governor clearly says, I don't want you guys working on N-reactor, I want you working on the repository, I think the result would be the same.
There being no objection to Representative Jones' motion, it is carried. Then, what do we do to clean up? Oh, let's adopt everything on the proposed amendments, the dash sevens, excluding section 17 and renumbering section 18 to be 17. Is that right, Mike? Oh, I'll move that.
Mr. Chair, was there not some concern that there was not actually a reference to other funds?
No, Mr. Chairman, that is boilerplate language for other funds. You speak of the revenue. It's the revenue that's limited, no matter how received.
Okay, well,
that's all right.
The chair will move the dash 7 amendments be amended by deleting section 17 and renumbering section 18 and inserting on line 16 the amount of $141,222. Objection to that motion? Hearing none. Carries? Yes, I just took it off of option, unnumbered option one. Then,
we'll move it out.
Senator Hannon moves the dash 7 amendments as amended to the engrossed Senate Bill 13. Objections, hearing none, adopted. Are we ready to move it out? Mr. Stinson, department, everyone. Senator Hannon moves Senate Bill 13 as amended by the subcommittee to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Judge, I'd like creating a Greek chorus. Recollection of the Greek drama, the Greek chorus, sort of like the legislature frequently is, but sort of plays out the passions of the public. You're going to be wailing over what the federal government's trying to do to us.
Well, this is actually This is actually the only substantial piece of legislation that directly responds to the passage of Measure One. It's the only one that actually does something. We sent memorials to Congress. We always do that. This actually creates a focus for the discussions, and I think that's a recommendation of the interim committee and everything we've heard from it. It's a good idea and will help in the cause.
Yeah, I like it.
Hearing no objections, the recommendation passes. And is there any further business coming before the subcommittee? No. See you tomorrow. We've got to do something, I think, more complicated.
House Bill 3383 and House Bill 2024.
Under order, open a public hearing on House Bill 3386. Ask Senator Timms to join us. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman McCracken, Representative Jones, Senator Hannon. I'm just here to voice my support for this legislation.
Wrong bill.
Yeah. 3383, it should be.
There you go.
Now, what is it? 3383. Okay, 3383. Open a public hearing on
3383. Well, do I have to go through that again?
No. I just said the tab was on the
right. I'm here in support of this legislation, and Denny Jones represents that area, and so do I. And I've been out to the site. We spent millions of dollars. It's a program that was approved by this legislature, and I think it's imperative that we get on with that program instead of having two tailing sites, that we get it all into one under a program that's been monitored and taken care of properly, and something that needs to be finished. I just wanted to express, and those are the opinion of Lake County.
Okay, the House Bill 3383 would make sure there were no legal impediments to the rapid proper disposal of the remaining mill tailings in the Lakeview area. Is that correct?
Right.
There's been some discussion that some amendments that appear placed on it by the Senate Ag and Natural Resources Committee do not accomplish that objective and may hamper it. And so I think a lot of people would be interested in putting it back to the House version. Is that?
That would, what I certainly believe in, because if you delay it, you're going to lose the federal funding.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Does the department wish to say something about this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Graney, Deputy Director of the Department of Energy. With me is Dave Stewart-Smith, our Radioactive Materials Program Manager. Just briefly, as Senator Timms has mentioned the bill, the project is important. We would urge quick action on the bill. With respect to the amendments, we would prefer the bill in the original form as passed by the House. Amendment with respect to attorney's fees, we think is a matter that the petitioners have filed a request with the court, and the court still has the opportunity to grant them attorney's fees or not, as it would seem appropriate. With respect to the direction for the Siting Council to complete rulemaking on ballot measure 9 by January 1st of next year, the Siting Council had previously decided not to initiate rulemaking because at the time there was no application or project pending. That is still true, although the Siting Council will consider whether to initiate rulemaking at its July meeting because a number of members have raised that issue. I think nevertheless, even if the council does go ahead to have a rulemaking process, the issues involved would be complex, and a statutory deadline could make that job difficult for the council.
And the council has sufficient authority to proceed with rulemaking if it deems appropriate.
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Did the House amend this bill in any other way than from when it was?
No, sir, not from how it was introduced. No, sir.
Okay, so all the amendments were placed on by the Senate committee.
That's correct, sir.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify during the public hearing of House Bill 3383? Okay, we'll close the public hearing. We'll open the work session. On House Bill 3383, Senator Hannan.
Mr. Chairman, on page 2 of the bill, I would move that we delete Section 3, beginning on lines 4 and concluding on lines 10.
And did you mean also just to delete, really, Sections 3 and 4? Through, that would be lines 4 through 12?
I don't know if Section 4 is needed. Was that an amendment?
Yeah, that was an amendment.
Okay. Well, that'd be Section 3 and 4 going from lines 4 through 12 then.
Good. Senator Hannan has moved that Section 3 and 4, that's lines 4 through 12 on page 2 of the printed Ann Gross bill, be deleted. Objections? Hearing none. Adopted.
Move it out as amended.
How about Representative Jones?
Oh,
Representative Jones moves House Bill 3383 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Objections? Hearing none. Carries. Representative Jones, full committee.
Right.
Senator Hannan, Senate floor.
Right.
And thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Mr. Weeks, some business to
Mr. Chairman, this is a bit of a carryover from your discussion on the Veterans Affairs budget. You recall that the governor did not include any general fund for the attorney assistance program, nor did he recommend any expenditure limitation or other fund expenditure limitation for the attorney assistance program, and instead had his analysts suggest that the authority for that program be repealed. You know, you asked or something in writing. We now have a memorandum from one of the budget analysts asking that the committee introduce, on behalf of the governor, legislation which repeals the attorney assistance program. And there's a copy behind each of your copy is the appropriate language that would repeal in Chapter 406 those sections which relate to the attorney assistance program.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move we introduce it.
Senator Hannan moves that a bill be introduced repealing the attorney assistance program statutes. And there's a major summary attached. This will be printed at the request of
the governor.
The governor. At the request of the governor. Objection to Senator Hannan's motion. Hearing none. So ordered.
Thank you, sir.
Now, let me see if I can get the right bill. Opening public hearing on House Bill 2024. Need someone to present the bill. Okay. President Cease will be joining you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Richard Ryder, and I'm manager of the Department of Environmental Quality's Hazardous Material Program. And I guess I will attempt to represent the other agencies who potentially are involved with carrying this program out. As the members may know, in the 1985 session, House Bill 3005 created the Interagency Hazard Communications Council and directed the council to coordinate hazardous material programs between state agencies. In addition, directed that there be a plan for the regulation of the transportation of hazardous materials prepared. But the council has met over the two-year period since they were created. This bill, in effect, would continue that particular activity in the state of Oregon, would expand the membership of the current council to include the state police, who were not included in the original designation, correct the designation for the Public Utility Commission, since that is now a three-member Public Utility Commission rather than a single person, and expand the public membership from four members to five members, and specifically direct that one of the public members be a public interest group. The other major changes that would occur to the council occur on page one, occur on page three. The bold information there starting on line 10, where it would direct the council to undertake a new federal program, which is the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act of 1986. This is a new piece of federal legislation that was included in the reauthorization of the federal Superfund program. Two principal objectives of this new federal program. On the emergency planning side, it's to have prepared in each community a plan to respond to any spill or release of a hazardous material. And on the community right to know side, a program very parallel to what you had directed the state fire marshal to carry out under House Bill 2255 from the 1985 session. The net effect in Oregon is that really you were about 2 years ahead of the federal government in these areas. You recognized the need for a statewide planning effort relative to hazardous materials, and you recognized the need for a state community right to know program. The other interesting feature of the federal law is that it's sort of self-implementing in the sense that it directs the governor to appoint an emergency response commission to carry out this program. And if the governor fails to make that appointment, the governor becomes the emergency response commission. And that occurred on April 17th. Now, the governor has made an appointment and has appointed the Interagency Hazard Communications Council as the Emergency Response Commission. But in either case, the point is there would have been a commission, although in one case it would have been the governor. When that occurred, then there are certain things that industry is required to do that were triggered on April 17th, and that is certain notifications must now be made to the State Emergency Response Commission. And then in October of this year, some additional notifications will have to be made, including a list of chemicals that each business uses. And then next July, there's yet a third program that industry will have to comply with in providing information on routine releases of hazardous materials into the environment. So this bill would sort of ratify the action that the governor has already chosen to take in appointing the IHCC as the state's emergency response commission to carry out Title III.
Governor Jones.
A couple of questions, Mr. Chairman. First of all, how does this fit in with what we've been talking about here for about 3 days now regarding DEQ and all their exploratory jobs that they're talking about, and Are they going to have to work through this council? And
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, if you would look on page 1 of the bill, section 2, there are two assignments that are made. One is to the DEQ and one is to the state fire marshal.
Well, I know that, but I mean, are we duplicating efforts here?
No. What we've been presenting to you in front of the other subcommittee is basically response activities. The accident actually happens, and what would local government do? What would state government do? What's contemplated here are the planning activities, working with a local community to have a plan in place.
Well, I believe that we, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, but I believe we've been discussing that angle of it too for about 2 days now.
Let me see if I can help a little bit. Last session, I was chair of Environment and Energy Committee, and there was some legislation that was pioneering. One of them was the Community Right to Know Act, and we made an effective compromise with business and industry. And apparently now the federal government has picked up that portion and made it required by federal law. In the meantime, the state fire marshal has developed a computer information. Would be less convenient and maybe not as informative even, you still maybe could not avoid not having to comply with what the feds want.
And we can't afford both. If I may, Mr. Chair, it's even more complicated than that, in that industry makes the choice in this case, not either the state fire marshal or EPA. Industry has the choice of either submitting a list of chemicals by name or submitting the MSDS. And what you heard represented here is most industries are choosing to submit the MSDS.
Yeah, but they have to fill out the MSDS to comply with OSHA, don't they?
That's correct.
Well then, that's of course why they're doing that, to comply with this new act, because they've already filled out the form.
That's correct.
That makes sense to me. I would do that if I were an employer.
So,
Mr. Chairman, to follow up on that, then what really the fire marshal's office is going to need is a staff person to collect this data, put it in a computer in a logical sense so you have some means of retrieval. Isn't that right? Probably be some kind of clerical person.
What we're going to do, I guess, is file it by company name, keep the MSDSs with that company together.
Type of person you'd need. You'd need a person,
yes,
probably in a clerical position. And Mr. Reeder, from the DEQ, you just indicated in section 2 here, subsection 1, that the DEQ and the state fire marshal shall provide the staff support to the interagency hazard communication council. Now, how is a clerk going to provide the staffing position to carry out that advice to the council?
Again, Senator Hannan, I indicated that we've been doing this for the past 2 years, and it's been people like myself that have been coming to the Interagency Hazard Communication Council each month to provide the staff support. We're prepared to continue to do that. If the new responsibilities of the federal law were not included in this bill, we would not have submitted a fiscal impact statement. We would have continued to support the IHCC with people like myself.
Not being critical, it's just that we now have an opportunity with this to gain some coordination among subcommittees and some budgets, and hopefully to keep the workload on Oregon's businesses as low as possible by coordinating the efforts and to keep the fiscal impact down. So that's fine. And it was a governor's decision, as I understand it, to add this additional responsibility to the council. Is that not correct?
It's my understanding the governor is in support of this legislation.
That was it. I thought he requested it. I thought that.
I think you'll find Representative Cease was the one.
One to request.
Yes.
Oh, well, I'll have to talk to Gail then. Let's see what. Okay. Well, we won't be moving on this right away. Integrated with another budget or two. And I haven't reviewed the fiscal statements. Maybe the committee want to take a look at those or not. Maybe we'll try to get an analyst to put it together. Rich?
If I may have one additional minute to try and respond to Representative Jones relative to the DEQ's budget that's already in. When we put that budget together, it was largely to deal with an actual response and how would you handle it. And so the kind of things we described to you earlier this week, Representative Jones, were after the accident happened. Who's going to respond? What kind of equipment are they going to have? What kind of training are they going to have? And is it going to be local government or state? Title III is on the front end of this whole process. It says local communities should think about what will they do if an accident happens. So in our budget that we've described to you earlier, there was no planning component. It was carrying out an action after a report of a spill or release occurred. Title III is in front of that and says, think about what you would do, and think about it at a community level, you know, a city level. And so it is a different activity than we previously described to you. And again, merely to explain, that's why we submitted a different fiscal impact for this bill than our budget on 55-52, because they are two different activities. One is planning for the event, the other one is responding to the event.
Yeah.
That's the critical part about this whole thing. That's why I believe that we certainly do need the planning. That was, I think, the legislator's intent for the last 2 years, and more planning go into it, so we get to the stage where we're ready to implement something, because you want the local governments to be able to respond, but they don't have adequate response. Some of those suits cost like $30,000, used one time and it's discarded. Who's going to pay for all that stuff? That's the question, and I think that's the point we were trying to get at, Mr. Chairman, was we were supposed to do the planning to get us up to this place where we could move to that next evolved position to determine how we're going to fund this, because somebody's got to devise a method of raising the revenue to buy the emergency response equipment that's desperately needed out there in the communities. The communities can't afford it.
Now, Fire Marshal was directed by the 85 Assembly to come up with a funding mechanism. Was there one, Mr. Kennedy? You're aware?
Yes, sir. House Bill, or Senate Bill 5552, which is in front of the Transportation Regulation Subcommittee this week, as Representative Jones referred to, contains the budget for those very things that you're talking
and
about.
And there's a fee-supported budget?
It's a fee-supported budget. Part of the money for that comes from Senate Bill 123.
Which Senate Bill 123?
Senate Bill 123. Has three components, a fee on underground storage tanks, a fee on transporting hazardous materials, and a fee on manufacturers who use hazardous materials.
Where is it?
123. Has it been assigned?
It's in Ways and Means.
It's in Ways and Means.
Not assigned.
You've been discussing it, right? As you've been trying to sort through the...
Mr. Chairman, it's not, that bill's really not in your subcommittee. It hasn't been assigned yet. You've been discussing it, but...
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is something really critical that we need to deal with this session, is getting the means of buying and paying for this stuff, because it's expensive.
One of the alternatives that the House had recommended last session was the fire insurance premium tax. In fact, the House had recommended a very small increase of 0.1%. But it turns out that's not needed because of that tax, because premiums have gone up so much, as everyone knows, that there's more revenue than can be spent in fire marshal, and something we're talking about utilizing those funds.
Chairman, as I remember, I think about $2 million surplus in there to request under House Bill 123 that we don't have is $996,000. And it's all broken down, and it's breaking down farther every day, seems like. But anyway, the top request was for $524,000. I believe it's down to four now, $100,000. And there's some question as to how much of that surplus you want to take away and use, and then cause them a problem next time without an ending balance. And
And also, I think the integrity of the funding source ought to continue to be respected. And it's paid for by insurance companies, so ought to lead either to the prevention or the control of fire.
you know, and so we need to keep the program together, though a lot of this clearly relates directly and would benefit the insurance industry and the people that pay the premiums.
My point there is that I don't believe we should use that just because it's surplus to beef up something else.
You know? I'm not saying that at all.
I know, you know, but I just want
to... Well, it seems like we've got to now iron out the difference between the two community right to know programs. There's a state program, there's a federal program. There ought to be some savings in combining those. We need a decision from the executive if they want the interagency council to be the designated agency under Public Law 99-499. All right, need to know that for sure, if that's what they truly want. Need to know if there's going to be a merger of fire marshal and emergency management to see if we can avoid some duplications there. Then we'll have to see how DEQ's budget goes. It could be that you'd want maybe ability to contract with DEQ Forest Service by some other agency. I don't know. It seems like your budget's kind of complicated up there. Lack of three votes, I think, is the complication. So that'll take a little while, maybe a few days, to find out. Then there's energy. Does energy want to come up and get into trouble? Or just come up and say that they didn't really need extra money, that they could get along within their budget to cooperate?
Mr. Chairman, my name is David Stewart Smith, manager of the Radioactive Materials Program for the Oregon Department of Energy. We, as is DEQ, are currently supplying staff support to the IHCC and fully intend to continue doing that. The fiscal impact that we had filed on this bill was in response to what we saw as full implementation of these programs, where currently we have to prioritize our efforts. And with our part of the program, transportation of radioactive materials primarily, and making sure that that is coordinated with DEQ's efforts on all hazardous materials, we are concentrating on the Interstate 84 corridor. We saw that the full implementation sure. statewide on all highways would require additional effort, and that's why we put in a fiscal impact.
But it's for radiological hazards, right? Only.
Yes.
And what kind of shipments then would not involve that I-84 corridor? From Trojan to the low-level site at Hanford, right?
That's part of it. In addition to that, there are shipments continuing up Interstate 5 from California, up
to
Highway
87. Low-level site again?
Yes, mostly to the low-level site. Some. Other than that, but very
97.
Some.
How urgent is it that you do planning on the other routes than what you're presently studying?
We are currently using the resources that we have to do the highest priority, the highest priority areas, and we feel we have a good program, an adequate program. If it's to be expanded to the other highways, it would take additional resources. But I would think that we have the most important part of the state covered because of the magnitude of the shipments.
Good, thank you. So they weren't that serious about the fiscal impact statement.
Mr. Chair, one additional item that the committee probably needs to understand. When the legislature set up under Senate Bill 109 from 1981 session, the transportation regulatory program that the Oregon Department of Energy manages, it gave us the authority to assess a fee per shipment of certain types of radioactive materials. That is the funding base for the program that we currently have. Those shipments, and again, primarily to the low-level site at Hanford, have gone down a factor of better than four, approaching a factor of 10 in the next couple of years over what they were only 2 years ago. There are many reasons for that. The state of Washington has taken action to reduce the amount of volume coming to their site. By January 1, 1993, the only shipments of radioactive waste to the Hanford site will be from the seven compact regions, which is only about 10% of what we have going there today. So our funding base will be in the future declining significantly. and we will have to then find other ways. We'll have to integrate our programs into other state agency programs, and we've begun to work on doing that, making sure that radioactive materials is treated in a consistent manner with all hazardous materials, and therefore our issue, the radioactive materials issue, will be handled along with the bigger package.
But if we're having a lot of budget trouble, and we seem to be in grappling with natural resources regulations, particularly the hazardous materials, do you have to be on the list with your hand out right now, or can you come back later?
We can clearly come back later.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear. Well, so let's just find out some more information and set this aside and see how things go. Well, President Jones?
I think after the vote from the speaker today that there's going to have to be a decision made within the next few days on the DEQ budget and all parts of it. And at that time, then I think you'll know exactly where you're at.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we don't have trouble with the IHCC. We just have some questions. And we think we have some opportunities for some cost savings. Right. Okay, well, anybody else want to testify? Good. So we'll close the public hearing and the subcommittee's adjourned. Interesting things you learn. No. No.
June 9th, 1987, Joint Ways and Means Committee, the Public Safety Committee meeting in room 174 at 1 o'clock to discuss House Bill 3381 and Senate Bill 5541.
Ways and Means Subcommittee will come to order. What we're going to do is fix a high priority bill relating to the Department of Insurance and Finance. It will only take a couple minutes, and then we'll deal with the Ethics Committee, a commission, which is the major agenda item for today. So I'll open a work session on House Bill 3381. The chair moves that the subcommittee reconsider the vote by which it recommended its passage by the full committee. Any objections? Hearing none, it's reconsidered. Mr. Weeks.
Mr. Chairman, we ask you to reopen the budget so that you could consider the potential for adding the securities regulation to the new Department of Insurance and Finance. Securities regulation has been handled by the Corporations Division and under a plan that's being considered at this very moment in another committee. That Corporation Division would be split. Part of the operation, that is the securities part, would go to your new department. Business Registry would go to Secretary of State's office. Now, since you're not sure whether that plan will go through as it's being proposed, we'd like to suggest to you an amendment to House Bill 3381 that would appropriate to the Emergency Board $1,715,853 for the specific, as a specific reservation to be used for the regulation of securities and franchises as they're described in ORS Chapter 59, I believe it is, and as they may be subsequently authorized in Senate Bill 1034. Now, that protects you in the sense that if securities don't go to this new department that you've created, the reservation is still there, and the Emergency Board will send the money for the securities regulation to whatever new unit of government is charged with those. But it also gets on record that you have this reservation available.
Representative Jones.
Gary, this money, if it had been left where it was, then what kind of an increase should we talk about?
There, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, there is no increase. In fact, you'll find a decrease because when we split the Corporation Division into two separate units, there is no need for a Corporation Director. Mm-hmm. So you'll save that money and potentially a little bit more.
I was just, no problem with moving it, but I just want to be sure that there is a new general fund increase that we can take care of on the House floor.
Is the executive branch supportive of Mr. Law and Mr. Kulongowski?
Mr. Chairman, we've talked about this with the
with Mr. Long and his staff, and Ms. Hader's here. I don't know whether she wants to comment.
Ms. Hader, would you care to comment?
I think they may, if they had their druthers, want to have more specific reference in House Bill 3381, that is a specific citation about the securities being there, but we don't think we can get that done in time for you to consider this at the full Ways and Means Committee tomorrow. We may not even be able to get this part of it ready.
Right. We're on, it's more than just a fast track. We now are running trains on two tracks. So we're trying to work in parallel with the Senate committee in filling the budget as that moves, as we try to get out of here by the 19th.
Mr. Chairman, Joan Hader, what our position is if it would be possible to put the limitation for securities into the Insurance and Finance Department with the provision that it wouldn't be spent, it would be unscheduled unless the bill passed, so that it wouldn't require an emergency board appearance. It takes a little while to get back to the emergency board, and each of the fund sources are dedicated, and to borrow it you have to pay interest. So it's a little bit of an inconvenience and a little bit extra cost to come back to the emergency board. So if we could have the budget with, you know, some provision that it wouldn't be used, what could happen is when the other bill passed, if by any chance securities turned out to be in a different place, you could have a section that amends this bill and takes that money back out again, so that we wouldn't, you know, somebody wouldn't get it twice.
Representative Jones.
It would seem in that case, then, if this don't happen and it stayed where it was or went to another committee, then you got to go to the E-Board in order to get the authority to take it back out of here and put it back over there. Isn't that right, Gary?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think what Joan's saying is right. You could put it in now and say it's going to be in the new department. If the bill, Senate Bill 1034, changes that, then you have to go into Senate Bill 1034 and say repeal what you already did in House Bill 3381 and put it in this direction. So it's awkward. No, the E-Board can't do that, but you could do that immediately before you adjourn.
Yeah.
What you're doing by our suggestion is simply saying you've got an E-Fund reservation for this purpose. They come to the first emergency board, which is likely to be mid-August or latter part of August, and get the reservation and take it to whatever unit of government now has the securities responsibility. And there will be a window in there from the beginning of the new biennium well, that first emergency board meeting where there's no money for securities. They would have to use the cash flow that's of the other funds, cash flow that's available in the new department.
What's there any balance projected to be?
Well, there isn't any in securities because it's largely general funded.
Got it. So, all right. The suggestion that's made of unscheduling it, is that appropriate? Can we deal with it in the time that's available to us?
I'm not sure she suggested scheduling. I think she said dedicate it to the new department.
Right.
If it doesn't go this way, cancel your dedication in another bill and reassign it. It just
we can't do that because we can't count on having another appropriate vehicle. We may never see 1034.
Well, there has to be a budget bill associated with 1034,
yes.
And they'll either put that budget information into 1034, or there's another bill you do have that's 1026. It is a vehicle
right.
That you could use.
Well, we intend to use 1026 to build up the other pieces.
The problem, Mr. Chairman, in dedicating a securities limitation for securities in this bill is this bill doesn't include any authority for your new department. So you got a limitation in a new department and no authority to use the limitation.
We can't put the authority in because it would take us too long to write the language.
It'd take at least a day or two, and if you really want us to try to be ready by tomorrow, we don't have the time to do it.
Senator Hannon?
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask Gary, would we have to amend this like the 3381 that we dealt with and sent out, it allowed cross-borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
Would we also have to amend that to include this now? In case that they needed to borrow for whatever reason?
No, your only amendment, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon, your only amendment to House Bill 1031 is one that
creates an emergency fund reserve for securities regulation, and that reserve will go wherever Senate Bill 1034 eventually sends that regulation responsibility. Okay.
But we can dedicate the money for this agency and leave it with the exec on schedule. Is that how it would be handled? Who would be doing the scheduling, the executive department?
If you were to go with an unscheduled alternative, yeah, you'd be directing the executive department to unschedule the money. But I think that's probably the worst of all.
I guess what we would be requesting is if you appropriate the money in this bill that you have before you, and then if something happened that securities didn't transfer, then the bill that took securities wherever it would go would take out this appropriation and give the money to whoever would be the receiving agency. And it would eliminate the department having to come to the e-board and to have to pay interest on the money it would have to borrow from other dedicated funds for the couple of months it would take to get back to the e-board.
And that's certainly an option. What we see as a disadvantage is when this 3381 starts going through, it would have a limitation or a responsibility that the department has no authority for. Yeah, and that may...
Senator Hannah. That was my question, because see, if it isn't back to the e-board for a couple months, then they're going to have to borrow from someone to keep the department going, and under the proviso, we've already added there that
the interest
director, so I think we better do it whatever you suggest and make it slick.
Well, if you don't want them to pay interest and you're willing to handle it in two different bills, and you're willing to put a limitation in here without authority, then you do what Joan says. You give them a limitation for securities administration, and then if it doesn't stay in the new department, you disappropriate that money in the next bill.
You know, I'm in such a good mood and so disposed to the Department of Insurance and Finance. I'm prepared to go their route, and also I think it will help to finalize the decisions.
Okay.
Let's just assume that this is where it's going to end up and act as though. Senator Hannan moves the LFO recommendations regarding the budget for securities regulation and moves that there will be an appropriation added to House Bill 3381 and the bill be appropriately amended.
Okay.
Objections to that motion? Hearing none. Adopted. Senator Hannan moves further amended House Bill 3381 to the full committee with the DuPess recommendation. Objections? Hearing none. So ordered. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5541 relating to the Oregon Ethics Commission. Representative Parkinson, I see you've been waiting there patiently. Sorry, we're just trying to get a bill ready for tomorrow afternoon's agenda.
Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, Fred Parkinson, State Representative from District 28. I appreciate you scheduling this on my free afternoon so I wasn't in too big hurry.
It was thoughtful, wasn't it?
About a month ago, I had a constituent phone me, and his complaint was that he hadn't been able to get a hearing. And I started checking. I visited with the staff of the Ethics Commission, and I found out that his case was not at all unusual. I think the time he has his hearing will be about 6 months, and it appears to be almost a normal procedure there. And that got me a little bit excited. And then with further visiting, I found out the reason is, in their opinion, is that they have not had proper funds budgeted for a full-time investigator. Further checking, I found out that Ways and Means had budgeted 3/4 of a position. And then I visited again with Betty Reynolds, and she said she was planning on hiring a full-time investigator. I think it must be probably interview in December and hire the 1st of January. And then I got a little bit more excited because I don't think that's really acceptable to people of the state. Either the person that signs a complaint on someone, the person who's the subject of the complaint, I think they deserve better treatment than that. I think I have a recommendation if I have anything to say about the process.
You certainly do, and it would be appreciated.
I'm of the opinion that the Ways and Means should budget enough funds for a full-time investigator, that the Ethics Commission be directed to get them on board as soon as possible. I'm of the opinion it would be valuable, however you do it, to fund the position for 12 months. At the end of that time, the commission would come back to the emergency board with a report, a schedule of their activities, their caseloads, that sort of thing, and at that time the e-board would fund them for the second year of the biennium. And I think pretty much, Mr. Chairman, that's about all I have to say. But I would just like to repeat that I think it's very poor public policy if a complaint is filed, the state is not providing enough resources for it to be investigated in a timely manner.
Well, we had addressed that issue the first time the budget was here and had a budget note that was specifically responsive to your point. We were concerned about the backlog and the delays, but we felt we didn't have enough money to go with a full-time investigator at that time. It remains an issue as to whether it's the legislature's failure to provide adequate funding or whether it's a question of management efficiency within the Ethics Commission itself. So one way to determine which it is would be to accept your suggestion of hiring a full-time investigator and seeing how well they do. Representative Jones.
Are we talking about then another 25% of one? Didn't we authorize like three quarters of one the other time? So we're talking about the other quarter now?
That's correct, and that would bring it to a double-digit increase.
Yeah.
Right. But we might have Representative Parkinson's vote on the floor.
Well, if he don't, then he...
That's right.
He better have a pretty good excuse, unless he don't have any more bills around.
It's one of these big spending House members you guys have been telling me about all day.
Mr. Chairman, let me just make another comment, and then I'll leave. I've got other things to do, and you fellows are much better qualified to sort this out than I am. But ethics very often is a perception, and especially recently there have been a lot of articles in the paper, I think, that maybe